If you look back at the past, you will trip over the future.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com. And you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_bball. We're going to look back at Sunday's 8 games. We're going to preview Monday's slightly smaller 6 game slate. We're going to shine the player spotlight on Dragan Bender of the Phoenix Suns, and we're going to talk about any other action that we missed over the weekend. So there's lots for us to talk about.
Let's get to it.
Before we get stuck into everything, though, just a quick programming note. This is the week before the All-Star break, so games finish on Thursday. So next week, while there are no games going on, there will be no podcast going on unless something major requires my attention, or if anything out of the ordinary goes on and I need to discuss it on a show. But there won't be any podcast. We'll resume the podcast next week with a DFS preview of the Thursday games. So we'll be running all this week. There won't be a show recapping Thursday's 2 games either. So a shortened week, I have a break myself around the All-Star break and then get back into it the following week. But obviously just doing the 4 shows this week, getting stuck into all the action that is going down before we head into this break and All-Star festivities. Let's look at what is happening in this week ahead. There are just the 4 days of games, as I mentioned. On Monday, we've got 6 games. Tuesday, we've got 6 games. Wednesday, we've got 12. And Thursday, only the 2 games. A lot of your leagues will have weeks 18 and 19 combined into 1 week. Some of your leagues will have them run as individual weeks. So it really does depend on how your league looks. For weekly changes league, I think the majority of leagues are doing it as a combination. So I'll go through how the schedule looks for those teams across the 2-week period. And for streaming strategy, we'll just look at what's happening at the beginning of this week. So if you are playing in a weekly changes league and you've got to lock yourself in for the next 2 weeks, the Philadelphia 76ers play the most games. They play 5. Nobody else plays 5 games. So they're the team who's going to have that most value across that week. So guys who might even be borderline players like Timothy John McConnell, they become guys that you can add and can own, especially when you compare them to players on the Pacers who only have 2 games. Now, Victor Oladipo is still someone that you'd lock in that case. Miles Turner is a little bit more of a borderline guy, probably more of a 14-team league player than a 12 team lock in with just the 2 games. And of course, the other 28 teams play either 4 or 3 games. Teams playing 4 games across this dual week, we've got the Wolves, the Hornets, the Clippers, the Pistons, Wizards, Rockets, Knicks, Kings, Bucks, Magic, Bulls, Lakers, Pelicans, Thunder, Warriors, Spurs, Heat, Jazz, Nuggets, Cavs, Suns. So as you can see, the majority of those teams, or the majority of teams in the NBA, are actually playing 4 games across this All-Star double week. The Nets, the Hawks, the Mavericks, the Grizzlies, Celtics, Raptors, and Blazers, those teams have all got 3 games this week. So it takes a lot of value off them when almost 3/4 of the teams play at least 4 or 5 games. And you've got just a handful of teams playing that 3-game week. So that does change a few things up. With the 4-game weeks, you might have decisions to make with players that play 4 games. The Suns have the toughest schedule across the 4 games. They have the Warriors, the Jazz, the Clippers, and the Blazers. The Cavs also have a tough schedule with the Grizzlies and the Spurs. Not that the Grizzlies are a tough team to play against, but fantasy-wise, the pace gets slowed down a little bit. And we've got Denver also having not the most ideal fantasy schedule. On the flip side, you've got the Wolves, the Hornets, the Clippers, and the Pistons who have got the more favorable schedule. But for teams that only play 3 games, no one's really got a great schedule. So it's not really going to be this great advantage to say Brooklyn, who's got the best fantasy schedule across their 3 games, is starting one of their guys over an equivalent Suns player with 1 fewer game. Look, the schedule isn't that much of a benefit where you look at it and go, yeah, you know what, I really need to get my Jarrett Allen in over TJ Warren or someone along those lines. That extra game trumps the trumps the schedule difficulty difference between the Suns and the Nets over that time. Wednesday for daily changes leagues, we're probably not going to be able to stream anyone in to be active. So we're looking at Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday as the days that we can look to add players there. Monday, Tuesday, we've got the Spurs having a back-to-back, which is an opportunity to stream in some of their fringe guys because they've already ruled out LaMarcus Aldridge for Monday. Tony Parker and DeJounte Murray are both questionable. Don't be surprised to see Pau Gasol sit on Tuesday and Parker to sit at least one of these games, and Manu will almost definitely sit one of the two games coming up as well. So you're looking at guys like Davis Bertans. Bryn Forbes is another option in that group of players who might have some value for you, maybe even a Derek White if Tone Parker and DeJounte Murray happen to sit out one or two of these games. So they're the only team with that Monday-Tuesday back-to-back. You can look at teams who have Tuesday, Wednesday back-to-backs, but of course, with 12 games on Wednesday, it's unlikely that you're going to use any of those guys. So there are three teams, though, that play Tuesday, Thursday. There are only four teams in total that play on Thursday, and three of them have the game Tuesday also. So they're nice little pseudo back-to-back ads, and that's the Wolves, the Bucks, and the Nuggets. So that's even if it's in a two-week matchup and you're looking to preserve your additions for the week, which you probably won't need to do because the majority of leagues, if you've got four ads a week, they'll give you eight ads a week, even though the grand total of games throughout the week is equivalent to a usual NBA week. So being cautious with streaming is not normally as challenging across this All-Star break, unless you've got seasonal caps on your ads, and then you still need to pay attention to how you are getting the most bang for your buck. But in most other cases, you're going to have additions up the wazoo and you're going to be able to do this stuff pretty comfortably and not have too much of a concern in getting the right amount of players into your fantasy lineups. Let's have a look at a few teams that we're not going to talk about in other parts of the show, and they played some games across the weekend. The first one of those we'll take a look at is the Washington Wizards. They were without Markieff Morris on the weekend, so we saw extra minutes for Marcin Gortat. He was okay, but nothing spectacular, definitely nothing to add. Well, Tomas Satoransky, you know I've been big on Satoransky for pretty much the entirety of this podcast, the whole duration this show's been going. I've said I think this guy can be a good player. He showed it. He had 25 points with 6 assists in 37 minutes, got smacked by Punch Bob and smacked his head on the court, was bleeding all over the place. We hope that there's no issue there for Satoransky in terms of missing in any time. He is a decent add in 12-team leagues, although prior to his previous two games, we saw him see his minutes limited as they ran with a lot more Bradley Beal as the point guard. That did change over those last two games, so maybe they're going away from that. He is a really good player, I think. I think he can be a starting point guard on a few teams in the NBA currently. Yeah, definitely. If he was in Orlando, he'd be crushing it there. He can play multiple positions as well. So really strong performance from Tomas Satoransky across the weekend. And also on that Punch Bob incident, I didn't think that was a dirty play really at all from Portis. And I am not the greatest Portis fan, as you'd be well aware. I didn't really have too much. It was a bit clumsy, but I don't think there was any. It definitely wasn't the I'm punching Nick Mirotic in the face type of a move from Punch Bob. The Los Angeles Lakers, they integrated Isaiah Thomas across the weekend, and he looked fine. 22 points with 6 assists, shot the ball really well. Only took 12 shots, which is fewer than Julius Randle and Brandon Ingram and Brooke Lopez, and the same as the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma. So it wasn't like he was going in super high usage mode. He looked better than he did in Cleveland, and he's going to have, I think, a fairly solid rest of the season. Lonzo Ball coming back, I don't think is going to have too much of an impact on Isaiah Thomas. That impact, I believe, is going to come at Josh Hart's expense. Hart had 29 minutes here, 9-2-1. And you know, a lot of people ask me, is Josh Hart a must-own guy? And while Lonzo's out, he has value. But just think, we're taking Jordan Clarkson out of this mix, who was playing like 22 minutes a night with Lonzo out, and replacing him with Isaiah, who's going to play 31 minutes a night. So those extra minutes have to come from somewhere, and they're most likely going to come from Hart. Maybe they come from Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, but in this game here, KCP played 35 and Hart only played 29 minutes. So I don't think that Hart is going to get this huge surge in value and really push even further forward from where he's currently been on this team. Randle and Kuzma also saw a big jump in their value with Larry Nance, of course, now in Cleveland. Let's talk about the Miami Heat. Dwayne Wade made his return, only played the 22 minutes, had 3 points, didn't overly exert himself. I don't think he's coming in and playing 32 or 33 minutes as we move forward. There might be a marginal impact on guys like Joshy Richardson. Goran Dragic battled some foul trouble, so that was the limits in his minutes. But the big hit's going to more come to guys like the Duke, Wayne Ellington, and a little bit to Tyler Johnson. Big game from Bam Adebayo with Kelly Olynyk out. He played 32 minutes. His minutes, his role, it's going to fluctuate. He can be owned in 12-team leagues, but I wouldn't classify him as a must-own guy just because those minutes are going to be up and down. The Denver Nuggets, they played two games across the weekend that we didn't talk about. They've got no backup point guard anymore. In one of those games, Monty Morris played the role. In the other one, Farton Will Barton played it. The Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, really struggled in that time. I don't think there's anything really to be too concerned about with him. Morris looked really good in his time. I think he's the all-time NCAA leader in assist to turnover ratio. He was really strong. And if he had a consistent role, then you'd be looking at him as a deeper league guy. But we just don't see that happening. Trey Lyles had a good game and a poor game. Baby Neck Wilson Chandler had a really strong game and a poor game. They are really fringe standard league guys, in my opinion, of course, which everything that I'm talking about is pretty much my opinion. The Milwaukee Bucks, the other team to talk about. The Muppet John Henson only played in one of those games. He came back from the hamstring injury, he played, and he sat out again. So the 21 minutes he played in that game back, I'm looking at that more as a hamstring issue rather than we're going to play three centers again. That could be the case. For some reason, they could decide to give Tyler Zeller a big run and split it with Thon McCur three ways. But I think the Muppet is fairly safe for now. That, of course, could change when we see Henson fully healthy. And if they start going 20 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes between McCur, Zeller, and Henson, it would piss us off. I think it would piss Bucks fans off. But we'll monitor it for now. We're owning the Muppet and we're just seeing exactly where it goes with that rotation there in Milwaukee. Let's look at the monstrous line of the night from Sunday's action, and it goes to Karl Anthony Towns of the Minnesota Timberwolves. 29, 8, and 6 for Townsie, 2 triples, a steal, 3 blocks. He was really good, 7 of 7 from the free throw line. It's not really too much to talk about. He took the most shots on the team, which is always a huge positive. Only took 8 shots in that last game, 17 in this one. He's the 9th ranked player this season, 8th over the last 2 weeks, 10th over the last month. And I think that range of between 7 and 10 is where you can expect him to finish out the season. There's going to be those usage concerns. He's had a 5% usage drop this season, which is a huge, huge drop. Obviously, Jim Butler arriving, but I've talked about the poor coaching and the way that has happened with Towns and Thibodeau. You're trying to negotiate how to distribute that offense. It needs to go more through Towns, and we saw great success with that happening in this game. So keep your fingers crossed if you are a Karl Anthony Towns owner. The waiver wire line of the night. Yes, The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, finally back in the starting lineup. It was absolutely asinine that it took as long as it did for Dedman to regain his starting spot with Miles Plumlee there. Miles Plumlee is trash. He shouldn't have been starting. He shouldn't have been playing any games. And in this game, finally, they made that switch. Dedman started, Plumlee was out of the rotation. Mike Budenholzer said, this is going to be the way we go with it moving forward. He said, we don't know. We're going to try and figure out what we're going to do with Plumlee. So, honestly, they just shouldn't be playing Plumlee at all. It's pretty comfortable. They've got Ilyasova, Collins, Dedman, and Muscala, who are all comfortably better than what Plumlee can bring. Dedman played 31 minutes here. He had 20 and 13. He hit a 3. He had 3 steals. He had a block, and he was 7 of 9 from the field. He is not going to play 31 minutes every night. The Baptist John Collins was in trouble with fouls, and that pushed Dedman's minutes up. But even in 26 or 27 minutes a night, he is a comfortable must-own player to me. Over the last 2 weeks, playing under 24 minutes per game, he's the 77th ranked player. Over the course of the season, he's a top 100 guy in under only 23 minutes a night. And while, you know, averaging 10 and 6.5 might not look sexy and only half a block, it's the 60% field goal percentage. It's the fact that he's been shooting 86% on two attempts from the free throw line, which is a positive. He's getting some steals. He can hit some threes. He's providing nice value across multiple categories. And then there's the ability for these sort of performances. He was putting up huge gains before he had that leg break. In the six games before he went out, he had a 20 and 14 game, an 11 and 9, a 17 and 6, and a 16 and 6 game, blocking shots and being very, very efficient. I think Dedmon should be owned in pretty much all leagues at this point. The most common question I got today was, do I drop the Baptist for Dedmon? I think John Collins' upside is higher, but Dedmon feels a little bit more secure. Collins struggled with fouls today, but the two games prior to his last two games, he played 26 minutes in each of those games. So you could make an argument that he plays 26 a night, he plays 23 or 22 behind Dedmon, and he plays 4 or 5 minutes alongside Dedmon or alongside Muscala as a power forward. I think that he does have that ability. We've seen him do it multiple times, and it depends on what they do with Ilerson Ilyasova, who played big minutes in this game but had his minutes pushed down closer to 20. So would I drop Collins for Dedmon? I guess it really depends where I'm sitting. Like, how comfortable am I with my team? Do I need consistent production now? If that's the case, then I own the Undertaker. If I'm in a happily comfortable position, then maybe I just wait and see what happens over the next 2 weeks with the Baptist. And if he can establish a 27-minute a night role, then he is going to be a little bit higher than Dedmon. But in majority of cases, I would say go Undertaker over Baptist. But just because we sort of know what that role's going to be, but Baptist Johnny Collins still has a little bit of higher upside there for him. The young gun of the night goes to Yogi Ferrell of the Dallas Mavericks, 20 and 5 for Yogi with 4 triples and 3 steals, 7 of 14 from the field. This was a game without Wes Matthews. It was a game without Dirk Nowitzki and a game without JJ Barea, so I don't think we should get overly excited. Ferrell had played pretty decent minutes in each of the last three games and hadn't topped double figures in scoring in any of those, and had shot really inefficiently, under 40% in all three of those games. Today, he hit 50% of his shots, he took more shots, he scored more, he hit his threes. I think it's more of a function of the absence of Barea and Matthews than any sort of indication of a new role for Yogi moving forward. He is more of a 16-team league guy. With Smith getting boosted in minutes, the removal of Devin Harris doesn't really impact him. Harris was playing almost exclusively as a small forward in Dallas. You'll see Barea, you'll see Smith, and you'll see Ferrell play. He might play 30 minutes a night, but he's played 29 minutes per night for the season, Yogi, and he's the 185th ranked player. He's doing very, very little, and he's doing this while shooting 39% from three. He just isn't a great fantasy contributor, so I think you can leave him on the wire in most cases, and I don't have massive hopes for him upside-wise in terms of dynasty value. I tell a man's not hot. The dart of the night goes to Nikola Batum of the Charlotte Hornets. Batum missed all 10 of his field goals. He had 2 points, 3 rebounds, and 5 assists with a steal. He's been strong over the last month, the 80th ranked player, but that was obviously an absolute turd burger of a performance from him. He seems to have shaken most of his elbow issues recently, but he is still that player that he has one bad game, and I invariably get questions. Oh, do I drop Batum? Do I drop Batum for Ferrell? I don't think I got that question, but that's the sort of thing. People just extraordinarily underrate what Batum has done. Over the last 17 games, he's averaging 14.5, 4.5, 4.5 with 2 triples and 1.2 steals, shooting 78% from the line and 35% from 3. Yeah, his field goal percentage isn't ideal, 42%. It's not high volume, it's not unrecoverable from, but he has a game like this. In his last couple of games, they haven't been fantastic, but he scored 2 in this one. But he had a string of 7 consecutive games of double-digit scoring, with 3 of those 7 going over 20. So I don't think we need to really overreact too much to this one game when he has been as strong as he's been, but I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that he will be dropped in at least one person's league who listens to this. Someone will drop Batum in those leagues. And if he does, I'd happily go and grab him. And I think he's a comfortable top 100 guy for the rest of the year. It just was not a good game for Batum, as is clearly evidenced by those numbers. Time for question time, and it comes from John Wright NS, who's on, that's his Twitter handle. His Twitter name is Johnny Jimson. Again, fake name. He says, what hobby would you get into if time and money weren't an issue? There's a hobby I've always wanted to try and do, and I don't think I'll ever end up doing it. I want to learn how to make clothes, and I don't really know why. I think it's just something where I look at something like a sewing machine and go, I have absolutely no idea how this thing works, and it confuses the shit out of me. But when I see something like that, I want to learn how to do it. But I don't think I'll ever, you know, be tailoring my own suits or shorts or, you know, I wear shorts 365 days of the year, pretty much. So I'm all for different types of shorts. I'd like to be able to do that. But if we're going with a hobby with time and money, no impediment, I'd like to become a pilot. I'd like to learn how to fly. I'd like to fly my own planes, buy a plane, fly it. Become a pilot. That would be the hobby that I would like to get into, is flying. But also on a lower scale, I'd like to be able to learn how to make my own clothes or make clothes for whatever. It's just something that I want to be able to conquer, and I don't think that I ever will. So thank you for the question, Johnny Jimson. Let's get into talking about these games that did go down on a Sunday. The first game we look at, the Toronto Raptors and the Charlotte Hornets. The Raptors, man, just another 20-point smashing. The Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
He left this game with an ankle issue, only played 11 minutes, and Normie Powell started the second half. He didn't do a huge amount. He had the reverse Richie Beno, 2 points, 2 rebounds, and 2 assists for Powell in 16 minutes, not really looking at a pickup in anything outside a 20-team league. CJ Miles did his thing. He gets hot like this occasionally, 24 points with 6 triples and 2 steals in 18 minutes, and you go, shit, man, let's go. Let's load up on CJ. But he's just as likely to go 1 of 9 for 3 points with 0 steals in the next game. So you can use him as a DFSG PP guy. You can use him as an option, as a streaming option for threes, but that's about it. No need to play any of their main players big minutes. So under 30 for Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan again. And I know that is killing your fantasy team because they're not playing those 35, 36 minutes because the Raptors are just crushing everyone. Their bench is absolutely going crazy with what they're doing. And you can't do much about it. Jonas Valanciunas, another big game, 21 and 9, a steal, a block, 2 triples, 24 minutes. He is looking better and better. I love what I'm seeing. This is finally the Valanciunas he's not even fully getting unleashed. He's just doing way more in limited minutes. Delon Wright had 6 assists, 2 blocks, and a steal, so that's where his value comes from. But if you're looking for a backup point guard who scores, it's Freddie VanVleet, who had 10 points with 2 triples and 4 assists. Wright is okay to look at if you have that need. VanVleet's okay to look at, but I wouldn't say either of those guys is a must-own player. Onto the Hornets, Dwight Howard had a couple of poor games, but bounced back 17 and 13, while Kemba had 23, 2 and 9. Jez Lamb, under 20 minutes, not happening for 12-team leagues. I do still get people asking, I was presuming getting shut down because of his elbow. That elbow hasn't been an issue for a very long time, and maybe at some point in April they go, well, Nick's not playing the last 3 games because he's having surgery, but it doesn't appear that that's the case at this stage, so there's no point in holding onto Lamb. Marvin Williams was poor, back to the early season Marv, not worth it in 12s, while Frank the Tank and Mick Kidd-Gilchrist did very, very little. Just an ugly-looking box score in general for the Charlotte Hornets in this game. Speaking of ugly, the Detroit Pistons lost to the Atlanta Hawks. Drummond had 25 and 15 with 3 blocks. He was good. Blake Griffin had 23, 7 and 6. Did not shoot the ball at all well, 33%. I know that many Pistons fans were shocked and dismayed, I guess, to see Jameer Nelson getting all the backup minutes over Langston Galloway and Dwight Bikes and actually closing the game over Ish Smith. Now, I have maintained plenty of times that I don't think Ish Smith's very good. He struggled in this game a lot, 2 points with 7 assists. Reggie Jackson's due back in maybe 2 to 3 weeks, so you could still hold Ish, but Stan Van Gundy used to coach Jameer Nelson in Orlando. We know that. Brought him in for a specific reason. Will he continue to eat into Smith's time a little bit? It is a possibility. He said that he liked Nelson out there because the ball moves around more than with Galloway and with Smith. So that is something to pay attention to. We're not adding Nelson really outside of 20-team leagues to maybe get a boost in assists. He had 5 in this one. And Smith, it depends on who you're looking at on your wire. Maybe he's expendable. Stan Johnson went to the locker room and also battled some foul trouble. 8 points in 20 minutes. So Jim Ennis got a boost. 23 minutes for Jimmy. 14 and 4 with 2 steals. He also closed the game over Johnson. So that's something to pay attention to. Johnson had been playing like 35 minutes a night. because their wing rotation was just really small. Ennis does help that. So we'll see if, does that bring, and it's not like Stan and Stan haven't butted heads before, so could Johnson be victim to Van Gundy limiting him to 28 or 29 minutes? That is a concern. And if we see that happen with a fully healthy Johnson with no fouls, then his value evaporates pretty quickly. Reg Bullock had 20 and 5 with 3 triples, continues to shoot at just extraordinarily high levels, and I can't believe it's still happening. It is going to drop off at some point, but for now, just ride what he's doing. For the Hawks, Ilyasova, 28 minutes, 19 and 5 with 2 steals. I don't imagine that continuing. Schroeder had 23, 3 and 7. While Kent Bazemore and the artist formerly known as Torian Prince, they battled to see who could be the most shitful. 1 of 8 for Bazemore, 1 of 7 for formerly. At least Kent chipped in other areas, 5 assists and 2 steals, and he is still a guy to own. Prince, I guess it depends on who you're looking at to add. I don't think, if I can drop Prince to grab the Undertaker, I would do it. But he's just really, really struggling at the moment. Tyler Dorsey continues to get minutes. He closed the game over Prince, 27 or 26 for him, 10 and 3. Didn't do huge amounts in other areas and definitely not approaching 12 or probably even 14 teamers. More 16 deeper is where you're looking at Tyler Dorsey, who's got a pretty consistent role with Marco Bellinelli gone now. He's looking solid, but not a fantasy stud as such. The Cleveland Cavaliers just throttled the Boston Celtics with all of their new players there. They didn't go with Larry Nance in the starting lineup. They put Jetty Osman in there. They started LeBron James at power forward.
LeBron James!
Osman was pretty good, 12 and 5 with 2 triples in 29 minutes, but that's more that deeper league, well, intermediate league, I guess, 14 to 16 team league value, while LeBron had 24, 8 and 10 and only played 28 minutes. That's how much of a smashing that was. But what about the new guys? It's really hard to get a full read of everything that is going down with this team just because we don't, it was an absolute throttling from these guys. So is the 21 minutes that George Hill played, is that realistic as we move forward? Is 19 minutes for Rocket Rodney Hood? Is the 23 minutes that Jordan Clarkson, like, how does all of this play out as everything moves forward with this team? So it is tough to know. Many people look at this game and go, Jordan Clarkson had 17 points in 23 minutes. He's a must-own guy. Well, let's cool it down because he shot 64%. He shot 75% from three, and that's not what he does. When we look at these lines that have really little contribution in other areas apart from scoring on high percentages, which isn't indicative of a player's career, it's unlikely to stick at that level. Plus, I don't think there'll be many games where Clarko plays more minutes than Georgie Hill. Hill was still fine, 12 and 3 in that game, but shot poorly. So I think that Clarko's a guy that I wouldn't be rushing to grab him based on this. You know, Hood shot well as well, 15 points in 19 minutes. Yeah, and another strong game from him, 15 points. He'd been playing well in Utah. But how does all that pan out with this team once everything looks solid or everything's settled? It's hard to know. A disappointing start from Larry Nance Jr., 21 minutes for him, 5 and 4 with 3 assists and a steal. I think he'll play more minutes in some other matchups, Boston's not necessarily a great matchup for him. So if you did add him, I'd be okay holding. I would be okay dropping him for, say, Dwayne Dedman. But it wasn't a great start. While Thompson had 6 and 4 in 27 minutes, nothing to get overly excited about there for Tristan Thompson. Moving on to the Celtics side of things, it was not great, obviously, for them. Terry Rozier played big minutes, 34 minutes, but it's a game where Kyrie only played 26. I wouldn't be looking into Rozier's line or playing time distribution as something that's going to be predictable like that moving forward. 21, 9, and 5. He's been really good. He is good when he gets the minutes. Marcus Smart returning after the All-Star break. He's going to put a little bit of a cramp on Rozier's value, but he does have some value for now. Greggy Munro.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Just the 5 and 5 in 12 minutes, that's two really low minutes games for him in a row. I don't think there's any reason to own him in 12-team leagues, maybe 14, but more likely 16 with the way the Celtics are running things. Jaylen Brown, real stiff for him not to get another dud of the night, 5 and 7 on 2 of 9 shooting, while Jason Tatum had a struggle as well, 9 and 2 in 27 minutes. All around, it was just really, really ugly for Boston in this game. The next team we look at with a lot of intrigue as well is the New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers get the victory, but we all want to know what's going on with those Knicks point guards. They started Jarrett Jack again, but only played him 8 minutes. We had Manny Moutier play 29 and Frankie Ntilikina play 31 minutes. And both those guys, you know, played well. Moutier, 14, 2 and 10, still shot the ball poorly, just 36% from the field, but he got a lot of minutes. Ntilikina also 31, 12, 3 and 1 with two triples. I don't understand the point of starting Jack at all. You've got two point guards who you're trying to see who is going to be your point guard of the future. And basically you play them all of their minutes together so that they don't have time necessarily with one another to actually run things, whether that's just 5 or 6 minutes each. You can start Ntilikina, play him the first 7 minutes of the game. You can close with Moutier, play him the last 7 minutes of the game, whatever it is. But I think you want to see some time of those guys having to them, you know, to themselves, running things as a point guard. Now, maybe that changes. Hornacek did say that he didn't want to put too much of a burden on either guy to be the primary ball handler straight out of the gate. But good signs from them. I wouldn't be banking on Moutier doubling every night. He's an interesting matchup. It's a pretty good matchup for him in this game. He's an interesting guy to go and add. But don't be surprised if he has 6 points and 4 assists in 30 minutes in his next game. He's just that sort of player. Ntilikina, I think he's going to get decent run the rest of the way. But we've also seen some weird stuff happen with this Knicks team where every time it looks like that, they pull it back the other way and limit the minutes of their younger guys. It doesn't feel that way this time. Trey Burke only played 8 minutes. There's no need to play both Burke and Jack. Those 8 minutes they got each. So yeah, adding Moutier might be a 12-team league situation. Ntilikina probably more of a 14-team leaguer. The other guy who copped it in terms of minutes hit was Courtney Lee, 14 points in 21 minutes, and he could also see his playing time reduced if they're going to run more Moutier and Ntilikina out there. Enes Kanter returned 17 and 11 in 27 minutes, while Koch had 14 and 9 with 3 blocks. This is why we love Koch. This is what he can do. He doesn't do it consistently, but this is what he can do. More of a 14-team league add, but absolutely can have some 12-team value. Luke Kornet, who went off in his first game, wasn't quite as successful here. 0 points in 13 minutes with 2 steals. I think he's more of a 16, maybe 18-team league player. We saw him get a lot of those backup big man minutes with Lance Thomas having his role reduced pretty significantly, and fair enough. If you can get 13 to 14 minutes out of Kornet moving forward, that's going to be useful in those very deep leagues, but he's not going to be pushing 22, 23 like he played in that game with Kanter out. Timmy Hardaway a little bit back on track, 17 points. Took him 17 shots, but at least the points were there, so that's a good sign for his owners. Oladipo, huge game, 38 and 9, 6 steals, 2 triples. A little bit down with the efficiency, but that's big from him. While Miles Turner, 13 and 6, with a block in 27 minutes. As I highlighted earlier, the Pacers have just 2 games over the next 2 weeks, so guys who might be playing well, Bojan Bogdanović, or Lance Stephenson, who had 15 and 4, and Bojan had 20 and 3. You're getting 2 games out of them where other players are going to get 5 games, or you can get streaming options there, and they're not good enough to hold in a lot of those cases. Corey Joseph battled fouls. He also battled being terrible. 2 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 14 to 16 team leaguers. And even then, in a 14 team league with just the 2 games coming up, I'd be more than happy to drop Joseph, because by that time, Daz Collison is likely back, or at least really close to being back, and then his value disappears real quickly. Thaddeus Young had 18, 11, and 5. Another strong game from him. I think he's fairly rock solid the rest of the way, while Sabonis had 6 and 10 in his 25 minutes. Did not shoot the ball well at all. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Oklahoma City Thunder, a big win from the Thunder. Marc Gasol, 18 and 6 with 2 blocks. That's fine. Jermichael Green, 14 and 12. A nice double-double for Green. I think he's a 14-teamer. I'm not rushing to grab him in 12-team leagues. There was no Wayne Selden. There was no Deontay Davis. There was no Chandler Parsons in this game. And Andy Harrison got himself into extreme foul trouble, 5 fouls in 11 minutes. So more minutes for Ben McLemore, more minutes for Mario Chalmers, but they're not situations that I think are going to hold. If you did add Wayne Selden in any deeper league, any 12 or even 14 team leagues, clearly you can move on from him. As for Harrison, with the return of Tyreek Evans, those numbers that he was putting up, they're likely to fade off as well. Now, Evans struggled, 12 points on 11 shots, 5 rebounds and 3 assists, but he was back. He was starting. He said he was a little bit fatigued after having not played in a couple of weeks, but he will be fine as we move forward. Onto the Thunder, no Westbrook, no Mello. Paulie George had 33 with 8 assists and 3 steals. Fat-faced Ray Felton had 14, 6 and 8. And Pat Patterson had 14 and 6. Both Felton and Patterson started in place of Westbrook and Anthony. But I guess the biggest surprise is 37 minutes out of Alex Abrines, 16 and 6 for Alex with 4 triples. He's pushed himself ahead of Terry Ferguson, and he is a reliable 3-point option that it will never... What depth of league you're in, you need 2 threes a game for this period of time. For the rest of the season, I guess, while Robertson's out, you can probably bank on getting 2 triples out of Abrines most of those nights. Steve-O Adams had 9 and 9, wasn't his greatest night, while Jeremy Grant just brutalized your free throws. 14 and 5 is still decent, but his value does disappear a little bit when Carmelo Anthony returns. The Dallas Mavericks and the Houston Rockets, talked about Yogi Ferrell already. They were without Barea, they were out without Wizzy Matthews and Dirk. Dwight Powell, who went to the bench in the last game, he moved back to the starting lineup, had 18 and 12 with a block. He has been putting up strong, strong numbers. But when Dirk and Wes come back, and Barea, those three guys all started the last game. When they come back, does Powell get moved to the bench? Does he play 29 or does he play 24 minutes? 29 minutes, he's a must-own. 24, not so much. So it is really up and down. It could be a matchup-based thing for Dwight, but he is playing very, very well. He looks good. He's a guy that I was pretty big on about 2 years ago. I sort of soured on him, but he's coming back with some force now, and he does have some value in 12-team leagues, but it is quite dependent on that role. 16, 5, and 11 for Dennis Smith Jr., 35 minutes. The field goal percentage is still an issue, but the other numbers are pretty sexy. And we got 31 minutes from Kyle Collinsworth. Yeah, whatever. We got 34 minutes from Doug McDirt. He is really pushing Tone Snell to see who can be the worst fantasy player in the NBA. 8, 3, and 4 for McDirt. He needs 30 minutes to even be a 16-team league guy, I think. And Jalen Jones played 23. Those three blokes won't be playing that level of minutes once Barea, Wes, and Dirk return. For the Rockets, no Joe Johnson yet. He got officially waived by the Kings and has to sign, so that'll be in the next few days. Ryan Anderson remained on the bench with PJ Tucker starting next to Luke Marmute. Neither of those guys has any value, but with Trevor Ariza out, Gerald Green stays in the rotation. He hit 4 triples and is just that, a points and 3-point streamer. 25, 8, and 9 for Chris Paul, 27, 6, and 5 for Jim Harden. The Mavericks were pesky, they hung around. The question was posed of Mike D'Antoni, will the signings of Brandon Wright and Joe Johnson impact the minutes of your other players? And he basically laughed it off and said, what do you think this is? Like, no, my guys are still going to play their minutes. They're just there as insurance, I guess, Wright as a third string center, and Joe Johnson as a guy who might eat into what Ryan Anderson does or take a few minutes from PJ Tucker from time to time, but not doing much for Paul and Harden's role as we move forward. Eric Gordon was putrid. He was 2 of 11 on 6 points, 24 minutes. With Paul and Harden there, I don't think that he is in 10-team leagues, he's not a must-own guy, and he can be dropped. And in 12s, he's definitely a borderline guy. You can see the difference in his game when he plays with both of those guys or when one or both of them are out. It is a stark, stark difference. The Sacramento Kings and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Kings team who a few weeks ago, almost a month ago now, went into we are developing the young players mode. Since then, they have traded away one of their young players, Malachi Richardson. They have waived another one in Yorgos Papayannis. So now, Vince Carter, Zach Randolph, Garrett Temple, Kosta Koufos are now every night parts of the rotation. So just conflicting anti-common sense approach from the Kings. And yes, I know that Frank Mason is injured. I know that Skal Labissiere is injured, but as I'm going to show you, this shit can still be rectified. Why is Buddrick Hield, who had 16 points, playing only 19 minutes? I don't think that Hield is a good player, really. I don't think that he is a 30, 32-minute starter-level guy on a good team. I don't think that. I think they see him as a sixth man. They've barely started him this year. That's fine. But 19 minutes for Hield when you've got Jakar Sampson playing 17, you've got Garrett Temple playing 24 minutes, there's 13 minutes for Vince Carter. Like, what is the point of that? Why are we getting your minutes for Hield? So why are they going down? Whereas we're developing our young guys, why are your minutes going lower? I don't understand that. Justin Jackson plays 23 minutes, less than Garrett Temple. I don't understand that either. Not a big Jackson fan. He's not going to be a big fantasy impact guy. But what is actually happening versus what is said to have been happening is just not meshing. My boy Bogdan Bogdanovic had 13, 3, and 8. He is a guy to own in 12-team leagues. While Koufos played 24 minutes, 12 and 10 in those 24, and De'Aaron Fox, 23, 2 and 2. Foxy's around on waiver wise. He shouldn't be, and he needs to be owned. Make sure that he's owned. Will Cauley-Stein, only 26 minutes, fewer than Zach Randolph, because of course, 10 and 7 for Cauley-Stein, while 12 and 6 for Zebo. I'm going to call him Zebo, because for some reason, how did that ever happen, do you reckon? That the letter, the last letter of the alphabet in the English language and here in Australia, we call it Z, but as it migrated its way over to America, the letter became Z. So I'm going to call him Zebo from now on. 12 and 6 for Zebo. He's having decent value because his minutes are consistently high. They're way more consistent than what they were 6 weeks or 4 weeks ago. So he does have some back-end value, but more a 14-team league player. Iman Shumpert and Bruno Caboclo won't debut for this team until at least after the All-Star break, and even then that might be a little bit further. Shumpert's still dealing with a foot problem. On to the Timberwolves, Jeff Teague, who saw his minutes significantly cut in their last game for Tyus Jones, he was back up at 32, had 12 points, 10 assists and 3 steals, so Tom Thibodeau not making that move, but in this game, Teague only took 5 shots, totally fine use of what he can do and showed his abilities in other areas. Jim Butler, 18 and 5. Wigo had 16 and 8 with 3 assists. That's a great game from Wiggins. That's the sort of thing we want from him more often, while Taj had 15 and 6. I don't understand why Gibson's just taking so many shots this season. 11 shots for him. Wiggins, 13. Towns, 17. So he had more shots than Teague and Butler. It's a weird thing. We're seeing so many more high-usage Taj Gibson games than really anybody should have seen ever. The Utah Jazz and the Portland Trailblazers, the Jazz, man, they went on a massive run. They are a real scary team at the moment. They are just crushing teams fairly consistently. They did this one without Rick Rubio as well. They started Don Mitchell at point guard, and they put Royce O'Neal into the starting lineup. O'Neal had 4, 11, and 6 with 2 steals and a block in 33 minutes. Now, they do have a back-to-back against the Spurs on Monday, so maybe there's some value there for O'Neal. I'd be looking at him as a 14-16 team league guy. He is comfortably ahead of Alec Burks, who even with Rubio out, played only 8 minutes, which was a mild surprise for me, while Hull Neto only got the 15. Jingle and Joe had 24, 5, and 4 with 6 triples. Another great game from him, while the Don had 27 and 6 in 37 minutes. Jay Crowder made his debut. It looked more like Boston Jay Crowder than Cleveland Jay Crowder. 15 and 5 in 29 minutes. 3 threes, 3 assists, and a steal. If you want to take a flyer on him in a 12-team league, I don't think it's the worst move. I still am not 100% sold on it, but it was a fantastic debut from Crowder. But we can't make all our assumptions based on just, one game, because things can really turn to shit pretty quickly after that. On the Blazers, Yusuf Nurkic left the game with hip issues and back issues. So Ed Davis played 29 minutes, had 8 and 12. If Nurkic misses time, we know that Davis is going to get rebounds and be a high field goal percentage guy, but that's all we can really rely on. Mo Harkless had another start, didn't do much, 5 and 5. The 2 steals and a block is nice, but he provides very little, more of a defensive specialist streamer. While the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Yeah, this was shit. 8 and 4 with 2 triples and a block for Aminu, really just hovering in that 14-team league zone. Dame was great, 39 points, not much else, but 39 and 25 shots is great, while McCollum had 22. And only one other bloke got into double figures, and that was Shabazz Napier, who had 10 in his 17 minutes. Really just a pretty disappointing performance all around for the Portland Trailblazers. That wraps everything up for the action from Sunday. I'm going to take a quick break. Then we're going to come back. We're going to look at the action for Monday, and we're going to shine that player spotlight brightly into Phoenix on to Dragan Bender. So stay tuned, and we'll get to all of that after the break.
How could I lose the view of the tattoo on your shoulder? If I knew you were coming, I would have asked for the day off. Well, I thought that you, much like me, would look 15 years older. But there's no signs of you aging, and you don't have a smoker's cough.
All right, guys, we're back. Let's go play a spotlighting now, and we're going to head to Phoenix, and we're going to talk about Dragan Bender, the second-year power forward slash center of the Phoenix Suns, who's a guy that I've been really high on. You heard me talk about him a lot. I say I think he's a really good player. He's going to be a good NBA player. He's going to be a quality starter. And to me, he is comfortably the best player out of that big man group of him and Marquese Chris, comfortably the better player. But as I have said many times before, he is the inferior fantasy option. If both those guys get the same amount of minutes, then Chris would be outperforming. But Chris's ability on the court shouldn't allow him on the court for as long as what Dragan Bender is. And we have seen the change in that recently. Bender has started the last four games for this team, some at center, some at power forward over Chris, and he has played over 30 minutes in three of those games. And the most striking thing we're seeing from Dragan now is he is becoming more aggressive. He is shooting the ball much better as well. Now, he is at 38% from the field this year, but over his last seven games, he's shooting 51%. Over his last 15 games, he's shooting 43, which includes 40% from three. But his usage in these last few games has risen. 13% for the year, 17% over this last little run, 18% over the last three starts. Some of that's without Devin Booker, without Tyson Chandler as well. Tyler Ulis wasn't there. So we're not sure exactly how that shot distribution's going to go. But Bender's quite a good defender. He's a willing passer. He's shooting threes. He's hitting them now. He only hit them at 28% last season. He's at 39 this season and 40 over the last month, as I mentioned. But he can pass. He can block shots to an okay degree. We're not seeing much of that. The defensive numbers are a bit lacking, but he's showing a little bit more of what we can expect from him. But still, not an elite fantasy type player. Even in this time where his efficiency is well up, his usage is up, in those last 2 weeks, he's the 149th ranked player in per 36 value, averaging 14.7 and 7.5, only 0.4 steals and 0.5 blocks per 36 minutes. You know, pretty piss poor defensive numbers there for Bender. And they're the sort of things as well. If he's a good passer, he's not a high assist racker-upper, although averaging 2.7 across the last three, a decent number of assists there. They're the things that keep you from being an elite option. But let's focus in on these last three games. 14 and 6.5, 2.7 assists. We love that. Comfortable top 100 numbers. But again, it comes without Devin Booker playing, without Tyson Chandler. Now, you should be able to make an easy argument that Bender should start at center for this team. You can start him next to Marquese Chris. And let's see whether that Chris Bender front court can work. Let's see him in 30 minutes per night. Let's see him with Lord Alfred Payton. Let's see him with Devin Booker, Josh Jackson, TJ Warren. Let's run that as a lineup. Let's run Payton, Booker, Jackson, Warren, Bender. Let's see how that works. There's a lot of possibilities here. And he has looked really good. I'm not certain that A, the efficiency keeps up, the 46% from three over the last week or so, probably not going to stick. The 50% from the field, also probably not likely to stick. And I'm not expecting much in terms of, you know, big defensive numbers, although he can be a better shot blocker. In his last season in Europe, he averaged 0.8 blocks in just 13 minutes per game. So that's a guy that's at about 2 blocks per 36. If you know, he translates that Europe form over to here, which we haven't seen yet, but it is, I guess, a possibility. He is a really young player in his draft class, and he is starting to show the sort of stuff that that made me like him so much as a prospect. I wanted the Celtics to take him at three over Jaylen Brown. At this point, that looks wrong because Brown has obviously played better, but I can still see Bender being an impactful guy, and Suns fans should be pretty happy with what they've seen from him so far. In this little run here, had some issues at the start, and I think you'll be finding it hard to find anyone who would take Marquese Chris over Dragan Bender at this point. Maybe you're one of them. If you are, let me know. But his advanced stats still don't look great. Yeah, still a negative box score plus minus. A PER of just 7 is pretty poor, and the team's actually performs better with him on the bench. versus him on the court. But again, we're talking, I want to talk about what he's done recently versus what he did at the start of the season, playing a better role, playing at center, which I think is the best position for him, and it is working out in his favor. So he is a guy, like, I'd probably prioritize him less than, say, a Dwayne Dedman, but he would be a guy that I'd toss it up between him and Larry Nance, probably still take Nance. I'd own him in every single 14-team league and deeper. But there is still, you know, what do they do with Chandler? How do they integrate him back in? What does Booker's return mean? Does Bender become a little bit more passive, which is what he has been throughout his career, apart from this little run that he's had over the last week to 2 weeks? But he showed a lot more fantasy-wise recently. Over the last 5 games, in fact, he has hit 14-3. So being super aggressive from deep, you know, launching those shots, they're going in. But again, it's a really small sample size for him to start to show this good fantasy upside. And the lack of defensive numbers is a concern. But his last game against the Nuggets was great. 23-8, 4 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. They're all the things that he can do. We've seen him pass well. Yeah, rebounding, hitting threes, blocking shots, things that he's done at various stages in his career. Can he put it together? If you want to take a flyer on a guy and think, you know what, they're giving him 33 a night moving forward and maybe this increased aggressiveness or aggression can stick, then by all means, he looks good. But I'm not locked in on Bender being this guy that he is over these last couple of games. As much as I like him as an on-court player, and as much as he should be twisting the Suns' hands, that he should be playing minutes comfortably over Chris, I'm not convinced that it happens, because, you know, the correct thing is not always the thing that's done across organizations in the NBA. We're all well aware of that, of course. The perfect DFS lineup from the main slate on FanDuel, 4-game main slate. Chrissy Paul, 55.1. Dame Lillard had 45.1. Wigo had 32.1. And Kyle Collinsworth, 31.1, of course. Paulie George, 56.2. And Jingle and Joe had 40. Jermichael Green, 37.4. And Pat Patterson, 28.2. While Carl Anthony Towns had 58.6. The total of 383.8 cost you $60,000. On DraftKings, Fatface Ray Felton had 34, Yogi Ferrell 35.75, Jingle and Joe 42.25, Jermichael Green 37.5, Townsie had 56.5, Chrissy Paul 54.5, Dwighty Powell 35.5, and Paulie George 55.75. That was a total of 351.75, and that cost $49,600. Dollary doos. There are 6 games on Tuesday as we start this shortened week of NBA action. The first one of these games that we're going to look at is the Philadelphia 76ers hosting the New York Knicks. The Sixers are favored by 11.5 and the total is 209. We're going to get a real interesting glimpse here at the Manny Moutier, Frank Ntilikina, Jarrett Jack, Trey Burke quartet and how that all runs. I wouldn't be surprised to see either Jack or Burke not play at all in this game, but that remains to be seen. Moutier on FanDuel at 3,700 is going to be 90% owned in cash. So he's going to open up so much in your lineup, you almost can't use him. And even in tournaments, he's going to be almost impossible, because the other people who put him in there, yeah, you won't have differentiation, but they'll just have so much more salary flexibility that it's going to put you at a disadvantage, I believe. So I think Moutier is almost the must roster guy of the entire day. As for Ntilikina, not as big on him as I am with Moutier. Minimum salary for Frankler absolutely opens up tournament possibilities for him. I could see using both of them. I don't think they're necessarily going to be, you know, siphoning value away from each other as much as what it might seem on the surface. Absolutely could use both of those guys in a tournament. Timothy John McConnell at 45 had a big game the last time out for the Sixers. A solid matchup for him. The salary has risen though, so a little bit hard to have any reliability there. While of course, Jarrett Jack and Trey Burke, no interest at shooting guard. Timmy Hardaway's at 57. It was close to that value today. I think he's worth a tournament look, but that's it. JJ Redick at 54. I think there's some cash floor there for Redick. I don't think Marco Bellinelli is coming in and taking those minutes away from JJ. Well, Courtney Lee at 48 is a strong fade. Small forward Bob Cubs at 56. Because of the matchup, because of the opponent, I'm in on him for tournaments, but nothing else. and I don't have massive confidence. While Mick Beasley at 65, love that price still for super cool bees. WB at 6,500 is absolutely an option there. I think he's a cash play as well as tournaments. Justin Anderson at 36, he's been playing quite well, had a nice game across the weekend ahead of Jared Bayless, ahead of Luau Cabro, but Ballinelli might have a slight impact in what Ando can do as we move forward. Power forward Šarić is at 7,100. I like the matchup. I like Šarić. I don't like the price for him here. I think he's more of a 6,500, 6,300 sort of a guy, not necessarily 71. So I think I'd leave him alone. While Benny Simmons at 9,000, I like this matchup a lot for Simo. I think that he is in a good cash spot here. Amir Johnson and Trevor Booker, no thanks. Lukey Cornett at 4,300. That's a pretty high price for a guy that no one had heard of until Friday, or until Thursday, actually. I think you can look at Cornett as a tournament guy, but I'm not really super interested in it. At center, the process, 10,700 for Embiid. He is coming off some big, big games, averaging almost 50 across his last five. Absolutely fine to use him against Kanter and Koch. Speaking of Koch, 4,500, he is a GPP guy, not really ready to rely upon him for cash, while Kanter at 7,000, I actively dislike using him in this matchup, although he did have that huge game against this team on Christmas, so maybe you could consider him. I just don't like the price, I don't like the fluctuations in his value and his playing time. On DraftKings, I like Simmons at 85 a lock, and Šarić at 6,400 on DraftKings is in a much better situation. Bob Covert, 53, is in play. Manny Moutier is at 43, still great value, not as good value as on FanDuel, but still in a really good spot. While Nil Aquino at 37, you're still looking at that more as a tournament option. Let's move on to the next one. We're going to look at the New Orleans Pelicans and the Detroit Pistons. The Pelicans smashed in their last meeting against the Sixers. The Pistons coming off that loss to the Hawks today, so they're on a back-to-back. The Pistons are favored by 3, and the total is 220 points. At point guard, Rajon Rondo went to the bench for one game, came back, started, had a 55 FanDuel point triple-double in 42 minutes. I have absolutely no idea what to make of his playing time. He is worth a GPP look. That's really about it. He could play 22, he could play 32, he could play 42 minutes. We have no read on what they're going to do with him at all. Ish Smith at 6,000 is a strong fade, while Jahmyr Nelson, revenge game for Jahmyr Nelson, he's at 3,700. He was okay today, but nothing to really get interested in. At shooting guard, Drew Holiday is at 7,600. I think that is absolutely fine for cash. He had 39 in that game against the Sixers. And yeah, 39 again wouldn't be a surprise at all from Holiday. I think he is absolutely cool to use. At small forward, Reggie Bullock at 4,800. Doing well in standard leagues because of his field goal percentage. Not really a high DFS guy. You could use him in a tournament, but I wouldn't feel great in cash at all. While Etuan Moore and Stan Johnson, probably fades for those guys. Nick Mirotic, 7,000, absolutely killed it against the Sixers. 62 points in that game. Love the upside here. I could even consider it for cash, but I do think that he is a great tournament play. While Blakey Griffin at 9,200 has done well against the Pelicans in the past, and that's with Boog there also. So I think this is a good spot for Blake for cash and tournaments. And then we've got centers. We've got Tone Davis at 11,700. Yep, let's go with him. He had 91 in that game against the Sixers. So yeah, that's pretty good. While Drummond at 10,800, I think I would fade Drummond at that price. I'd spend the extra 900 and I would take Anthony Davis. Let's have a look at things on DraftKings. Drummond at 10,100, more of a tournament guy. 11,400 for Davis is totally fine on DraftKings also. Mirotic at 7,000 I like. And Blake Griffin at 95, I lean more towards fading him just because of that increased salary. Bullock and Rondo, still some tournament guys, but Rondo's even more highly priced on DraftKings than he is on FanDuel. And the 7,500 for Drew, I think, is solid, a decent cash play, not really a huge upside-y type of a guy. The Los Angeles Clippers, sorry, the LA Clippers and the Brooklyn Nets. The Clippers are favored by 4.5 and the total is 218.5 points. Miloš Teodosic is questionable. If he is out, that gives a bump to Austin Rivers and it gets Ty Wallace back in the rotation. Miloš is at 41 if he plays. I don't think we'd really want to be looking at him, while Spencer Dinwiddie And point guards do well against Brooklyn, no doubt about that, but I just fear that he'll play 20 minutes so Austin Rivers can get his 32 in complete nepotism. Spencer, and I like Austin Rivers. Spencer Dinwiddie at 7,500, absolutely on a massive roll at the moment, averaging 40 across his last five. Really hard to steer clear of him. D'Angelo Russell is playing well, played well in the last game. But I still like Spencer here. It just depends on your other options. Well, Rivers at 5,100. I'd be in on Rivers in cash if Teodosic is ruled out. At shooting guard, D'Angelo's at 5,400. Had 37 in that last game, in the overtime game. Looking better. Still absolutely no interest in cash, but a clear tournament guy here. Well, Lou Williams at 68 somehow played less minutes than Rivers in the last game. I think 68's a decent spot for Lou. Probably more tournaments. Avery Bradley still terrible. Fade. Small forward, the Blue Swimmer, 5,000, coming off some really good games. Had 40 points in his last one in that overtime game from the Nets. I can't do it. I can't do him for cash. I can't rely upon him. He is a tournament guy, but he could give you 10 points. He could give you 40. That is just the story with Crabbe. And that game, the last game that he had, was his best output of the entire season. So pay attention to that. I like Damari Carroll for 55. Maybe not much upside, but a strong cash option, especially with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson already out, as well as Caris LeVert. Jumpin' Joe Harris at 4,600. No issue with using him in cash. With LeVert out, Hollis-Jefferson out, he's getting a bigger role. He's averaging 31 over his last three. Yeah, that's money at that salary. The Rooster, 6,800. I love what Gallinari's doing. He can give you 32, 33. That's fine for cash. Maybe his upside's a bit limited, but I think you'll find on one of the other sites his salary is stupidly low and he becomes a great play there. Dante Cunningham, minimum salary, actually played 20 minutes in the last game, which I despise. Hopefully when everyone's healthy, he is not in the rotation for the Nets. He is a low, low upside guy. At power forward, Quincy Acey coming off the bench at 3,900. I don't hate Acey for cash. I feel like he can get you 20. And if you just need that salary relief to get some other guys in, that's fine. The table, Montrezl Harrell, 42. I'll leave that alone. Center, DeAndre. Center's against the Nets, man. Let's go sick. 7,800 for DeAndre. I'm in. That's 50-point upside there for him. Almost probably, you'd say, 38-point floor. Totally in on him. While Jarrett Allen was a real disappointment. Only 19 points in 17 minutes in an overtime game against the Pelicans. Was getting torn up by Anthony Davis, so they limited him. He's at 5,800. I think that's a bit high to use him in cash. More of a tournament guy, but still obviously has that upside. For speaking of guys who have that upside, that means I won't be speaking about Jahlil Okafor. On DraftKings, I like Jarrett Allen for tournaments again. I like AC for cash at 37. Dinwiddie at 64 is a great option. And DeAndre at 7,200, also awesome. And I think you can put Danilo Gallinari, the Rooster, in at 6,300 as a cash option on DraftKings also. Let's go on to the next game. We're looking at the Orlando Magic. They're taking on the Chicago Bulls. Aaron Gordon and Nick Vucevic are both listed as doubtful. Chris Dunn may be ready to return, and that's going to have an impact on Jaren Grant and maybe even a little bit of an impact on Zachary LaVine. While Bob Portis was ejected in the last game, I don't think there'll be any suspension coming. The Bulls are favored by 4.5, 215. The Clippers and the Nets and the Bulls and the Magic are the stack games. There is value that could appear all over the place in this matchup. Chrissy Dunn at 7,500. I wouldn't want to use him first game back from the concussion, but the matchup is super great. So as a tournament option, low owned, if he's ready, then he could easily drop a 40 against this Magic point guard defense. You've got Shelvin Mack and DJ Augustin. Augustin had the one big game, and then Mack came around and had the big game after that. 44 for Mack in that last outing. He's at 55. DJ's at 61. I think at this point, given how we don't know how the minutes are going to go game by game, that using them in tournaments is the way to go. I would have DJ ahead of Shelvin. I think he's probably got a path to minutes a little bit clearer and a more realistic fantasy target, but both of them have that tournament value. Jaren Grant at 65, obviously no use there at all if Dunn plays. And even then, I don't think he's a great cash play or tournament play if Dunn is out. Zach LaVine missed the last game. He'll be back. He's at 8,200. And you know what? He has been almost providing that value every game, averaging 41 over the last three. And the matchup is so sexy for Zach here. 8,200. I think you consider it, but I don't love it for cash. But he could easily drop a 50 here on the Magic. While Fournier on the other side, he's at 6,600. I love his upside here against the Bulls. a really strong matchup. He could torch Levine going the other way. So I think he's got 45-point upside, 50-point upside, making him a strong tournament guy. Justin Holliday's at 5,500. Just been solid around that high 20s, low 30s mark. Not bad for cash. Don't like the upside for tournaments. John Simmons at 57. You can have that. I won't. Mario Hezonja at 57, likely to start with As Gordon out. Had 34 in the last game. The matchup's a good one. Absolutely no problem using him in cash. The Hammer Denzel Valentine will go back to the bench. Nwaba's minutes will be cut, and Wezawundu at minimum salary is getting some minutes, but doing exactly zero with them. Punch Bob's at 6,300. I think that's too high for Portis. He can produce numbers. He's not going to be afraid to jack up shots. We're aware of that. If you're going to use him, I would be looking tournaments only. Well, Lauri Markkanen at 66, probably also a little bit too highly priced. Robin Lopez at 4,500. After the Bulls said we're going with the young guys, Lopez played 28 minutes across the weekend. I don't think we should be getting too excited about using him. And Bismack Biyombo gets another game as a starter. No. Not happening. I didn't talk about Ken Birch. He's at 4,500. He's in a spot where he could get some value here, but I think more tournaments than anything concrete for cash. On DraftKings, Levine, Fournier, Augustine, Holiday, all those guys I think have great cash value. That 5,000 for Justin Holiday is a really strong cash spot. 61 for Fournier I like. Chrissy Dunn at 65 has got good tournament upside. Levine at 69 is probably...
Giggity!
Probably one of the best cash plays on DraftKings there is, I think. Shelvin Mack at 48, a nice tournament sort of a player there as well. Ken Birch at 37 also has some tournament upside with Vooch and Gordo unlikely to play. The Spurs and the Jazz, we already know that LaMarcus Aldridge is out for the Spurs. Tone Parker and DeJounte Murray are both questionable, which could open up some Derek White minutes. It could open up some Bryn Forbes minutes and also some Pat Mills minutes. This is the first game of a back-to-back for the Spurs, so we've seen them limit guys like Pau Gasol, who could be in a great spot or also could play 12 minutes. Dan Green could also be limited. Manu could be limited. They can do one of two things. They can play them bigger minutes than usual and then sit them Tuesday, or they can just pull them at halftime and not play them. Mills can actually fall into that category as well. So there's a lot of unknowns here with a lot of the Spurs players. Doesn't mean there's not value in some other spots. DeJounte is at 51. If he is ready to play, maybe in a tournament, but it's a bad matchup on a guy with a bum ankle. If Tone Parker is out and Murray is in, I'd be more interested in using DeJounte there. Ravishing Ricks at 8,000. Yeah, dealing with a hip, dealing with the Spurs as an opponent, that's a fade. Well, Pat Mills at 41 would get that value if Murray and Parker are out. We could look at him as a tournament sort of a player. The Don, 7,600 for Don Mitchell. Strong game from him today. The Spurs have a habit of limiting almost everyone who plays against them, so a little bit hard to use him. Tournament, yeah. Cash, no. Manu at 42. Dan Green at 44. Alec Burks. No interest in those guys. Brittany Forbes at 35 would be a tournament guy, but in his last game, he had minus 1 point in 20 minutes, which is a pretty tough thing to do. I like Kyle Anderson here. Love him for cash. 5,300. Don't think his minutes are really changing. This is a strong, strong spot for Kyle Anderson, I believe. Well, Jingle and Joe at 55 is a GPP guy, more so if Rubio is ruled out. Royce O'Neal at 4,000 also would be your GPP guy. Even look to cash if Rubio is out with a nice, solid, low salary. Davis Bertans at 39, all in on that for cash and for tournament upsides. With Aldridge ruled out, he's going to have to play some pretty big minutes. Favors at 55, I think we'll leave that alone. While Jay Crowder at 37, totally in on using Crowder at that low of a price, cash and tournaments. Don't care, it's the Spurs at that price. That is hard to go past. Gobert at 77, yeah, maybe. Again, the Spurs, just it's a pain in the ass. While Pau Gasol at 5,400, no way I want to use Pau and cash. We don't know the minutes and the Gobert factor, but he could go out there and play 30 and have 20, 11, and 7. And give you 40 fantasy points pretty easily. So that's why you have to have him as a GPP option, I believe. No interest in Joffrey Laverne either. On DraftKings, I like Bertans at 4,300 for cash. Gasol and Gobert, more GPP guys. And I'd throw Don Mitchell in there as well. 5,200 for Kyle Anderson is a decent spot too. And you can use that for cash, I believe, on DraftKings also. Last game of the night, we've got the Phoenix Suns and the Golden State Warriors. No spread currently. We don't know if Devin Booker is playing. He's questionable with that hip issue. Tyson Chandler should be back. Tyler Ulis is questionable with back spasms, and Draymond Green is doubtful for the Golden State Warriors. So that means that Kevon Looney could very well get a start and most likely will get a start and can become a value option there. If Booker is out, then we're more heavily in on Josh Jackson. You can look at, and if Ulis is out, you can look at a guy like Joshy Gray as a GPP guy while Lord Alfred Payton's value stabilizes. If for some reason the Suns keep this close, seems unlikely, then Steph Curry at 10-2, he will go out there and put up 50 against them, no problem. But there's a real risk he plays only 27 minutes, which is why you don't want to use him in cash. As for Payton at 7,500, no Booker in there, I'd be in on him in cash. With Booker maybe going to play, I think at price is probably a little bit too high. While Joshy Gray, as I mentioned, if we have Booker and Ulis out, then I think that you can use him as a tournament guy. Booker's at 7,400. I think the minutes will be limited if he does play, so that's a fade. Clay, I'm not caring too much about here. Uncle P, Troy Daniels, Pat McCaw, no thanks. At small forward, Iguodala at 44, no interest there, even with Draymond out. Durant at 10,900, the same story as Curry. You could throw him into a tournament if somehow the Suns keep it close. Well, Omri Caspi at 35. If you throw out multiple tournament lineups, Steve Kerr could go with Caspi over Kevon Looney. He plays 27 minutes. He should smash through that number. He could have 30 points, and that could be a real tournament differentiator for you. TJ Warren at 75. I think I'll leave it alone. I'm not really that keen. Well, Joshy Jackson at 68. Love it for cash. Really like it for tournaments also. Looney's a minimum salary guy. He's at power forward. I think that he absolutely has tournament value, and you can slot him into cash. I'd have a guy like Manny Moutier higher as a low salary option, but Looney's in a good spot here. Dave West at 44. Yeah, I think that's not a bad cash, but probably just his salary's actually gone up a little bit too much over what it was a couple of weeks ago, making him a tough one to use. Marquise Chris at 4,700, nothing to do with that whatsoever. Well, Dragan Bender at 49. With Tyson Chandler back and not knowing how they're going to run it, hard for me to say use him in cash. More going to be a tournament guy that requires a few things to go in his favor. Chandler and Pachulia, no interest at all. On DraftKings, I like Durant at 98 and Curry at 99 in that tournament setting, just in case it gets kept close. But that's realistically about it here. Oh, Looney at 3,200, actually. No, sorry. There's a lot of value there in Kevon. 6,200 for Joshy Jackson's not bad, and 71 for Lord Alfred Payton is a usable salary. All right, let's go through and have a look at those other sites now. Let's take a look at Yahoo for tournaments. Pau Gasol, for the reasons I mentioned before, the Blue Swimmer, Kylo Quinn, Jumpin' Joe Harris, Manu Ginobili, Tone Tolliver, Frankie Ntilikina, and for Cashua, Quincy Acey, Manny Moutier, Shelvin Mack, David West, Reggie Bullock, Mario Hezonja, Bertans, DJ Augustine, Kyle Anderson, Jarrett Allen, Evan Fournier, Zachy LaVine, DeAndre Jordan, Benny Simmons, and Joel Embiid. On Moneyball for tournaments, Durant, Steph, Powell, Evan Fournier, Rondo, Jarrett Allen, Bullock, Koch. And for cash, we got Moutier, Jumpin' Joe Harris, Bertans, Damari Carroll, DJ Augustine, Kyle Anderson, The Rooster, Mick Beasley, Toby Harris, Spencer Dinwiddie, Levine, DeAndre Jordan, Benny Simmons, Blake Griffin, and Joel Embiid. And on draft stars, Stephen Durant for those tournaments again as that option. Powell for tournaments, Fournier, Punch Bob, Tim Hardaway, Jarrett Allen, Reggie Bullock, Kem Birch, Shelvin Mack, Darius Miller, and Jameer Nelson. And for cash, you got Ntilikina, Quincy Acey, Kyle Anderson, Bertans, Augustine, Toby Harris, Šarić, Mirotić, Levine, Jordan, Simmons, and Blake Griffin. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. And you can also find it on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net. Especially go and check out Locked On Grizzlies, where Peter had John Hollinger on. We've had Brad Stevens on Locked On Celtics. We've had Anthony Tolliver on Locked On Pistons. Some high-profile guests coming on right across the Locked On Podcast Network. I am Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. If you find this podcast on YouTube, give it a subscription, give it a thumbs up, and leave a comment down below. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. George Hill.